One of the key elements of persuasion is the ability to educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose. Your presentation skills, how are you coming across? As Daniel Webster said, if all my talents and powers were to be taken from me, and I had my choice of keeping but one, I would ask to be allowed to keep the power of speaking, for through it, I would quickly recover all the rest. Have you happened to notice the dramatic changes that have involved in training and teaching over the last 20 years? The basic focus used to be to educate. Now, the latest research is all about how to grab the attention of and maintain the interest of your audience. We can no longer focus simply on educating. We must now entertain. Why? Because our audience members' attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. So to keep their limited attention, they must be kept entertained. Nowadays, you have only 15 to 30 seconds to create a powerful, positive first impression before your audience begins to tune you out. Today, the process of combining education with entertainment is called edutainment. Like it or not, today's media influence culture breeds listeners who want to be entertained. Now, hold on here. I'm not saying you've got to go out and learn how to juggle swords and swallow fire if you want to garner your prospects' attention. But it is paramount to your livelihood as a speaker, as a persuader, as a teacher, to be engaging. Long gone are the days of counting on the subject matter to speak compellingly for itself, compensating you for your inadequacy as a presenter. Nowadays, you've got to get inside your prospects' minds, and you've got to get there fast, before you're even in the heart of your message. As we interviewed managers, we found that 90% of them said communication and presentation skills are some of the most important skills they are looking for. This tendency reveals how truly critical a life and persuasion skill, communication, really is. So what are the key ingredients that will make you an engaging, compelling, and persuasive speaker? How can you educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose? So let's talk about the most critical components of a powerful presentation. These are what I call the 5 P's of a perfect presentation. They are psyche, preparation, presentation skills, people skills, and persuasion. So let's talk about that first one, your mindset or psyche. You must approach becoming and being a powerful presenter with the right mindset. There are many factors that play into the strategy, but two of the most crucial ones are visualization and understanding the nature of fear. Visualization refers to what I like to call mental programming. I call it mental programming because I believe that you can literally program your mind to achieve certain goals, thereby controlling much of what actually happens. So much of what is manifested on the outside reflects on what's going on in the inside. These days, this statement is almost beginning to sound a little cliche, but I still hold firmly to the belief that this is still the case. Think of any successful athlete, or even Olympic athlete. They have seen their victories over and over again in their mind long before the world ever saw them. Psychologists believe that the subconscious mind cannot differentiate between that which is real and that which is vividly imagined. Therefore, whatever you consistently and vividly rehearse in your head, your subconscious will accept as a truth. So when you look at mental programming, it's actually quite a literal thing. You can also see how it can be either a very powerful tool or a very dangerous one. Where are your thoughts taking you? What kind of messages do you play over and over again to yourself? Mental programming has too powerful and too direct of an impact on your behavior to not take it seriously. How does all this apply to public speaking and presentation and training? Practice your presentation in your mind. Visualize your perfect performance mentally before you do it physically. Program even the smallest details, like just remember that your thoughts control your emotions and your emotions control your actions. Don't plant that negative thought in your mind. So learn to visualize and learn to take control of any fear that you might have. Fear is so debilitating, and yet it's so prevalent. I would say, in fact, that it's probably the number one obstacle standing in the way of having a solid, positive mental mindset. Yet when its true nature is revealed, we're no longer bound by the mental and emotional limitations it imposes upon us. What are the most common fears when it comes to public speaking? That people think we're stupid? That our message will be criticized or rejected? That we'll freeze and forget what we're supposed to say? I want you to think about this fear from another perspective. Can you imagine members of your audience sitting out there saying, I hope he does a terrible job. I hope she is really dry and boring. I hope he gets nervous. I hope she passes out. I hope she gets all red and blotchy. Do you see how ridiculous this line of reasoning is? No one out there, unless it's your competitor, is hoping for your demise. Of course, I'm being a little facetious here, but really, can you recall a time when you heard a speaker or a musical performer who really didn't do a good job? Perhaps a performer even performed terribly. When you witnessed this failure, you probably actually felt pained, didn't you? If the performer feels awkward and uncomfortable, then you as an audience member, you do too. And who wants to feel like that? Your audience really does want you to do a great job. They want to hear a presentation that's engaging, incredible, exciting, and solid. Furthermore, consider the fact that they have made an investment of time, money, or both into attending your presentation and would therefore be totally entitled to expect you to do a fantastic job. Sometimes something as simple as realizing that your audience really is rooting for you can go a long way toward alleviating your fear. Because when you talk about the fear of public speaking, you hear the word and the term sometimes is lolliophobia, which of course is the fear of public speaking, an affliction with which most of us are faced at one point or another in our lives. Here's another thing to consider when it comes to fear. Many believe that public speaking is universally regarded as the number one most common fear. On the other hand, however, we also know that human beings' only inborn fears, that is, the only fears we're born with, are loud noises and falling. All these other fun little fears you have are learned. Now let's think about it. If you've learned it, you can unlearn it. So recall the mental programming we talked about. Have the power to rewire your thoughts and beliefs. You're only afraid of public speaking, or anything else for that matter, if you tell yourself you are. I'm not saying that fears aren't real and that eradicating them is so simple that they can just be swished away by the wand of happy thoughts. I'm not talking about intense psychological issues or resolving traumatic deep-rooted fears, but I really believe that the basic premise, we've heard it time and time again, that what the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. So I want you to now focus on what is driving your fear of speaking. Think of the first time you felt fear over getting up in front of a crowd. What triggered this learned fear? The moment you can realize why you feel this fear, you can change your future. Why are you so concerned about what other people think? So what if they judge or criticize you? They aren't thinking about you or judging you as much as you think they are. In fact, Napoleon Hill said, "The fear of criticism robs man of his initiative, destroys the power of imagination, limits his individuality, and takes away his self-reliance." So focus on a great presentation. Some people might criticize you, but quit caring what others think of you and realize how little they actually do think about you. Understand that you must never plant the seed of nervousness in your prospects. What I mean by this is that you must never tell your audience you feel uneasy or nervous. The moment you spill the beans, they will start to look for evidence of your nervousness. 99% of the time, your audience has no clue how nervous you really are. Don't expect perfection the first time you speak. In fact, I have never seen a perfect presentation. I have never given a perfect presentation. Nervousness is normal. Everyone feels it before a presentation. In fact, a great presenter once said, "It's okay to have butterflies. You just need to get them to fly in formation." You are the master of your domain. I remember my very first speaking engagement. I was excited, and I'll admit I was a little nervous. You know, I was faced with some of the common fears that we'd already discussed. Even though that we know and I knew that many of our fears are most likely never going to happen, they still have a way of trying to take center stage right before we get on stage. Anyway, my first public speaking engagement, the sound crew had put a microphone or lavalier on. I was pacing back and forth with a few minutes still left to go, so I decided to visit the men's restroom. When I came out, I realized that my microphone had been and still was live and that the business in the restroom had echoed throughout the whole audience. Another time, I had to give a very long presentation. I was getting towards the end without incident, but still had quite a bit to go. I was feeling a little fatigued, so I paused to take a drink of water. Well, to make a long story short, the liquid went down the wrong pipe, and in a coughing, gasping spasm, I sprayed the whole front row with water. And yes, in regards to the classic speaker screw-up, I have tripped and fallen on my face. I have had my fly down. My point in sharing these personal bloopers with you is to help you see that even when you make mistakes, it's okay. In spite of the momentary mortification, it is a learning experience and gives you great stories to tell in the future. You'll get past it. And believe it or not, it is something that later you will likely find very humorous. Better yet, it provides you with great examples next time you speak in front of an audience. So if you're serious about being the best you can possibly be, you owe it to yourself to really take ownership of where you are at and where you are headed. To accomplish this objective, put yourself in the seat of an audience member. Do you have irritating body language? How is your vocal projection? Do you need the sound more animated? All in all, are you someone you would want to listen to for a long period of time? Additionally, it is important to read relevant books, attend enrichment seminars, listen to cutting-edge audio programs to immerse yourself in the world in which you want to excel. This kind of intense focus will yield vast improvement in your persuasive capabilities. Always remember that improvement is a process. You will have those, what we call those aha moments, where things will suddenly click. But your complete transformation will not happen overnight. Stretch yourself, but be realistic. Because often honing a new skill is like exercising for the first time after a five-year hiatus. That is, there's some definite discomfort at first. Developing public speaking and presentation skills is no different. After you start mastering those skills, it feels great. But how do you get to that point? You've really got to treat yourself as a do-it-yourself project. A simple strategy is to videotape yourself when you speak. As tedious or even painful as it may be to do so, you will gain valuable insights from watching yourself. Insights that will change your world. Feedback from any other source will be helpful, but it is always second hand. There are many factors that go into your preparation. Obviously, you must have your message prepared, but there are many other things to consider as well. For example, you have to know as much as you possibly can about the people who will comprise your audience. You must uncover what their interests and expectations are. You must also take in consideration where you'll be speaking, what time of day it will be, and what logistical and technical considerations may play a role. Perhaps, most important of all, you must know the members of your audience as intimately as possible. Your whole objective is to effectively and successfully get a specific point across to them. You must first understand to whom it is you're presenting and where they're at philosophically in relation to your point. The more information you have at your disposal, the more effective your persuasive attempts will be. So think about these questions. When you're looking at your audience, who are you going to speak to? What is their common background or interest that brings them all together to hear you speak? Who are these people as individuals? Professionals, students, mothers, fathers? Will your audience tend to be more one gender than the other? Are they going to be mixed? Do you need to be aware of their political, religious, professional associations? What will their average education or income level be? What topic can you speak about that they will universally care about and understand? What type of things would they be looking to get out of your message? What will they agree with, disagree with? Will they be indifferent? What's their general age range? Will they tend to be more conservative or liberal in their life views? Is this going to be an easygoing or demanding crowd? How much time do you have? What time do you need to end? See, these questions will allow you to customize your presentation to your audience. Obviously, you will not present to a board of college professors in the same way you would address a group of inner-city youth. After you've discovered all that you can about your audience, you begin to tailor and customize your message, and decide exactly how to present it. And here's your simple formula. Discover, design, and deliver. So once you know all there is to know about your audience, you must then figure out how to organize your presentation in the most appropriate fashion. Again, when doing so, there is plenty to consider. Think about the following ideas when you structure and design your persuasive message. We talked about the time, the setting. How big's the audience going to be? Are you going to be on a platform, behind a podium, a wireless mic, time of day? Just think about it. Will your audience be tired, refreshed, hungry, preoccupied? Do you need a break? What about distractions? Noise, children, traffic, sunlight? Can you look at the room ahead of time? What equipment will be accessible? Overhead projector, PowerPoint, flip chart, blackboard, dry erase board, sound system? You want to think about these things ahead of time instead of 10 minutes before it starts. What is a good outline for the message itself? The first area of concern, of course, is your opening. You have to grab their attention in the first 15 to 30 seconds. This is a brief window where you must introduce your topic, grab their attention, and let them know why they need to listen. And once you've engaged your audience's attention with a solid opener, the body of your presentation becomes the next most important phase. It should provide relevant information and provoke discussion about the issue at hand. In so doing, it should progressively lead up to the solution or your key point. After you've stressed your key point or presented the solution, whichever format is most appropriate to the situation, you then conclude your presentation by summarizing the key points. Finally, you clearly and concisely issue your audience what we call a call to action. In other words, what exactly are you telling them to do once they walk away from your discussion or your talk or your presentation? Your call to action should be straightforward, easy to remember, and easy to carry out. When talking about your call to action, you must empower your audience to want to do exactly what it is you want them to do. Confidence and conviction during your call to action is a critical persuasive component. The effectiveness of your call to action is all about how the audience perceives you. Because it is such a crucial component, I would suggest that you write your call to action before beginning any other phase of your presentation. When doing so, ask yourself, what exactly it is you want your audience to do upon completion of your presentation, and then build your presentation around the answer. I recommend sticking closely to this outline or a similar variation when preparing any persuasive speech. You must keep your presentation cohesive and easy to follow. Experts say that you forget 80% of everything you've heard within 24 hours of hearing it. With that stacked against you, you really can't afford your presentation not to be cohesive and easy to follow. Make your presentation even more effective. Consider stressing a main theme and reiterating it 3 to 5 times throughout your presentation. The human mind loves theme and repetition. Of course, I'm not saying you should be redundant. You need to have some variety. You can underscore key points in different ways, but all the spokes of your wheel of evidence should point back to the same hub. Repetition increases awareness, attention, comprehension, and persuasion. I think we all remember the infamous O.J. Simpson trial. The thing we'll always remember about the courtroom drama is the line, "If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit." With that simple repeated phrase, defense attorney Johnny Cochran created an unforgettable line that he knew would lock itself in the jury members' minds. And then there's Jerry Spence, who was a commentator during the O.J. trial and who's widely heralded as America's finest trial lawyer. He's never lost a case. One of the reasons he has maintained a flawless record is because he always presents a crystal clear theme that he knows will resonate with his audience. One of the most famous cases involved a defense of a bankrupt family-owned ice cream business and a suit against McDonald's over a breach of an oral contract. His theme? Let's put honor back in the handshake. In their defenses, Cochran and Spence were both under the same winning technique, a common and memorable theme that is backed by supporting material that is organized in 3 to 5 main points as a surefire strategy for getting your message across clearly, easily, and make it memorable. You will feel more confident in yourself and your message when you find ways to rehearse and practice your speaking before you actually get in front of the audience. When you know your introduction like the back of your hand, you develop more confidence. When you are prepared, the fear of public speaking erodes away. If you want to dazzle your audience, make the topic dance in front of them. I believe there is no such thing as a boring topic, only boring speakers. And here are some ways to increase your confidence and your ability to present with power. Practice in front of a mirror. Get familiar with the location where you will be speaking. Videotape yourself and watch yourself for ways to improve. Test all your stories and your jokes on a neutral audience and visualize your success before the presentation. And part of these presentation skills is the structure. So why should we be concerned with the structure of an argument? Well, all effective persuasive messages have several vital pieces of information. We've all heard of Plato, and he says every message should have structure like an animal. You know, a head, a body, and feet. So must our arguments follow an understandable pattern. Because if you don't, we know a confused mind says no. If the audience can't follow your facts or the substance of your message, then their brains will not accept your message. That's because there's no clear message to accept. At one time or another, you've probably been in a classroom where the teacher has completely lost you. You had no idea where the topic was going or where they had been. When this happens, your mind stalls and the learning process stops. Confusion is a state of mind that creates tension. We all hate to be confused. When as persuaders we create this mental confusion in our audience, you're shooting yourselves in the foot. Most uneducated rookie persuaders follow Harry Truman's advice, which is, if you can't convince them, confuse them. And that's the exact opposite of what we want you to do in your persuasive presentations. Before we jump into the meat of this topic, remember as you prepare your persuasive message that you want to focus on one defined issue. Keep in mind that you are not there to persuade your audience on 10 different points that aren't integral to your own original agenda. In other words, don't inadvertently offend your audience on one issue when your focus is on another. The structure of your persuasive message should follow this pattern. The first part of this pattern is you need to create interest. You have to generate an interest in your chosen topic. Your audience needs a reason to listen to you. Why should they care? What's in it for them? How can you help them? A message that starts with a really good reason to listen will grab the attention of your audience, thereby enabling you to continue your presentation. Without this attention, there is no hope of getting your message across. Second piece is state the problem. You must clearly define the problem you are trying to solve. The best pattern for an effective persuasive speech is to, number one, find the problem. Number two, relate to the audience how it affects them. In this way, you show them a problem they have and why it is a concern to them. That is, you illustrate why this issue is a problem to your audience, and then you reveal to them how this problem affects them. The next is offer evidence. This is the support you give to back up your argument. Evidence validates your claims and offers proof that your argument is correct. It allows your audience to rely on other sources besides you. Evidence can include examples, statistics, stories, testimonies, analogies, and any other supporting material that is used to enhance your integrity and congruency of your message. When you include different supporting material in your presentation, you can individually target different personality types. Everyone resonates with different supporting material, so the more pieces of evidence you incorporate in a group situation, the more audience members you'll convince. The next one, you have to present a solution. You have gained your audience's interest and you have provided evidence in support of your message. Now you must solve the problem. In leading up to the resolution, you present the argument you want your audience to believe and then satisfy the need you have earlier identified or created. In doing so, you have created dissonance in your audience's mind and now you are providing them with a solution. How can your product, service, or idea meet their needs and wants? How can it help them achieve their goals, needs, or wants? And last but not least, the call to action we talked about earlier. A persuasive message is not true persuasion if your audience does not know exactly what they need to do once they walk away from you. When presenting your call to action, be specific and be precise. In order to complete the solution to your audience's problem, you must spur them to take action. This is the climax of your presentation, the peak of your logic and emotion. Keep in mind that the prescribed action must be feasible to your audience. Make your call to action as easy as possible. Using this type of call to action structure facilitates people's acceptance of your message and clarifies what you want them to do. We all have a logical side of our mind, which results in our need for order and arrangement. If we don't sense some sort of structure, we tend to become confused. In response to this confusion, we create our own organizational flow, thus creating our own solution. If you can't be clear, concise, and orderly in your call to action, your prospects will find someone else who is. This is where the honing of a solid, positive mindset and where through thorough preparation come together to really give your message substance and polish. We previously talked about a presentation's basic outline, opening, body, recap, conclusion. Let's now talk about some great ways to open. Remember, you've only got about 15 to 30 seconds before people start to settle into their impressions. Hence, when effectively presenting, we want openers that will not only grab your audience's attention, but will also quickly establish our credibility, cultivate goodwill with our listeners, and introduce our topics. Think of your opening as not being more than 10% of your entire presentation. Budgeting your speech in this manner forces you to organize your time so that you will know exactly what you're going to say and how you're going to say it. Scrap the old fillers like, today's topic is, or I'm going to speak on, or worse, I was assigned to talk about. When preparing your opener, think of efficiency and accuracy. First of all, consider ways that will grab your audience's attention and perk them up. Several of the most effective approaches involve humor, personal stories, the posing of a question, sharing of a quote, or the presentation of a tension and perk them up. Several of the most effective approaches involve humor, personal stories, the posing of a question, sharing of a quote, or the presentation of a startling fact or statistic. Anything you feel that will get your audience to pay attention is critical to your opening. When preparing your opening, how do you establish credibility? One thing is for sure. Don't just start spouting off accomplishments and credentials. Sure, education and experience matter, but there are subtler ways of mentioning them. Sometimes it'll be natural to mention the school from which you graduated, to refer to a publication that you authored. Many times, you can do so without seeming pompous or cocky. A better strategy than tooting your own horn is to have someone else introduce you before you come on. Another handy way is to highlight your qualifications without including a "Why I'm so great" section in your speech is to include a written bio or sketch in any material you may hand out. Your biography could even be included in the basic itinerary that is handed out. Such background information is commonly seen for keynote speakers and programs. For example, a written bio could be very effective, but it is very important to keep in mind when furnishing this blurb about yourself that it be written in the third person. That is, as if someone else is describing you. Another aspect is to establish goodwill with your audience members. Now, what I mean is that you want them to feel that you genuinely care about their needs. You want to exhibit your desire to share something that is both meaningful and useful to them. Very early on in your presentation, you must clearly communicate to your audience the two pressing questions, WIIFM and WSIC. Now, WIIFM means what's in it for me, and WSIC means why should I care? Your audience has to have a reason to want to listen to you, and providing them with the answers to these questions gives them a great reason to listen and pay attention. If you can answer their unspoken but sincere interest in what's in it for me and why should I care, they will definitely feel goodwill towards you. You can achieve a win-win situation where you feel the goodwill extends in both directions. Finally, how do you go about introducing your topic? Your introduction can be worked into an opening story, question, statistic, quote, or joke you can use to grab your audience's attention. You can also set up your presentation in a way where you grab their attention and that smoothly transitions into your topic. Last but not least, the obvious is, and let me remind you, that a charismatic demeanor from the get-go will carry you miles beyond a dry, monotone demeanor. Part of being a great presenter is also understanding your audience. What do they want? How do they feel? Why are they there? How do you respond to a hostile audience? This is an audience that does not want to be there, that disagrees with you, that will be working against you. And if you find that happening, spend time to find common beliefs and values, something that you can agree on. Can you find appropriate humor to break the ice? And of course, you never want to start a presentation with an attack on their position. And keep in mind that you're only trying to persuade on one point. as we talked about earlier, don't talk about anything that could be considered hostile, offensive, or condescending. Now, there'll be differences with this audience. Look at your credibility. Increase your credibility. Find expert studies or any source that will support your claim. And a hostile audience will try to find reasons not to like you. Don't give them any. And never say, today I'm going to persuade you. Point out that you're looking for a win-win. Show them that you've done your homework. Respect their feelings, their values, and beliefs. And try to spend time using the law of connectivity and the law of balance. Show them that you've done your homework. Respect their feelings, their values, and beliefs. And try to spend time using the law of connectivity and the law of balance. Now, if you're going into a neutral or indifferent audience, they don't understand your position. They don't care. They haven't had a reason to care. There's not much motivation or energy. And so you really need to be dynamic. So you really have to point out the what's in it for them. Point out the downside of not accepting your proposal. You'll have to use some great motivation, which is a combination of inspiration and desperation. This is an audience where we really want to use a great story. How does the topic affect them? How can you get them to connect with your issues? And when they start out neutral and different, you never want to start off with some complex or hard-to-understand arguments. Find concrete examples that incorporate familiar situations or events. Well, they need to be convinced. Encourage questions. Keep the facts simple and straightforward. And spend time and research finding out why they're uninformed. Examples and statistics, quotes, the audience will respect. Stress your credibility. Point out things such as degrees, special expertise, and experience. Keep your message interesting, and you really want to focus on the law of dissonance and the law of scarcity. And hopefully, most of the time, you'll be in front of a very supportive audience. They already agree with you. So you might think that persuading them is easy, but the reality is it's not really to get them to agree with you, but get them to take action. So if that's the case, you need a lot of energy, enthusiasm, inspiration to help them see the vision. You want to inoculate them against future attacks or other arguments that might come against them. Get them to take action and support your cause. Let them know what needs to be done. Let them know what's going to happen if they do nothing. Use testimonials and focus on the law of esteem and the law of expectation. Now, really understand that most audiences that you'll probably be speaking with are a mix of all four. When dealing with a new audience, find out the dominant type that will be present and tailor your remarks accordingly. Of course, you should always consider mixing in some techniques from the other three areas, since your prospects will always be a blend of all four audience types. I'm a big believer, as you know, when you talk about presentation skills, that it's not always what you say, it's how you say it. I call this verbal packaging, which is critical in presentation skills. The words we use and the way in which we use them can have a huge impact and will have a huge impact on how we were perceived by the audience and how persuasive we will be. I love what Mark Twain said. He said, the difference between the right word and the wrong word is the difference between lightning and a lightning bug. You see this all the time in marketing and advertising. Have you noticed that used cars are now referred to as pre-owned or even pre-loved? Somehow this terminology softens the negative connotation associated with the word used. Invoice instead of bill. Representative instead of salesperson, concern instead of problem, investment instead of price. This is also known as doublespeak. And the airline industry has some great examples of creative packaging. You know, delayed instead of late, flotation device instead of life preserver. If we examine other industries, the list could go on and on. You can take a cue from these industry giants by employing a bit of your own verbal packaging. That is, it would be a great idea for you to develop your own list of words and phrases that are relevant to your industry or topic. That way, you will have alternatives in your persuasive toolbox for words that may be jarring or having a negative connotations with your audience or prospect. Other ways you can make your language more effective are to use the words like we and us during your presentation. That way, you can engage your audience and create a cooperative, we're in this together, feel during your presentation. You might also want to consider making your language verb-oriented. Doing so gives your speech a feeling of energy, momentum, and vitality. When you really try to paint the picture and help your prospects feel like they're in an actual situation you're describing, use vivid language. Lastly, as a general rule, and particularly when you're trying to get a key point across, Always lean toward being concise rather than verbose. If you can get the point across in 5 words instead of 10, then don't complicate your message by trying to be flowery or clever. Chances are people will start thinking about how pretentious you are rather than focusing on the point you're really trying to get across. Just like when we talked about structuring your message, it holds true here as well that clear and concise are your safest bets. As you've heard in early reports and audios, that humor grabs your audience's attention and creates immediate rapport with them. Humor can be a very effective persuasive weapon when it's used skillfully. Of course, you can end up really embarrassing yourself if you don't tell a joke quite the right way and no one laughs. When it comes to humor, your audience will either laugh with you or feel sorry for you. You can find humorous ideas on the web. There's books, great places where you can put this into your presentation. It is always a good idea to test your humor on friends, or better yet, on individuals who might be of the same mindset or understanding of your audience before you're in an actual persuasive situation. Stories are another way to easily engage your audience. Often it is through telling a story that a message can hit home with your prospects. Stories give people something to identify with. They can entertain, teach, and inspire all at once. When incorporating stories into your presentation, you can draw from your own experiences as well as others. The Chicken Soup for the Soul book series is an excellent resource. These volumes contain stories that are tried and true and that you know have already touched millions of people. Draw from any source that you feel will enhance your presentation, but don't feel obligated to use a piece of arsenal that is not appropriate. Now let's turn our attention to the use of visual aids. What might these include? Well, when we think of visual aids, we envision the common ones like charts, graphs, pictures, or PowerPoint presentations. During your presentation, you can also use handouts, video footage, or even a physical object if it is relevant to your message. Visual aids are effective persuasive tools because they are optically stimulating. Most people are visually oriented. When you tap into both the auditory and visual senses, comprehension and retention increase dramatically. When preparing your presentation, consider what are your different options in terms of what visual aids you can use in the situation. As a general rule, the shorter your presentation is, the simpler and fewer your visual aids should be. Now, conversely, if you're going to be speaking for quite a long stretch, it might be wise to utilize different visual stimuli throughout your presentation as a means of holding your audience's attention. However long your presentation is, you need to manifest enthusiasm for your subject. If your objective is to inspire people and get them to act, then you must transfer pure energy to them. As a university instructor, I have my students give passion speeches. The only point is to see if they can instill the same intensity of interest in the subject in their audience that they as a speaker project. I remember one student who gave a very impassioned speech about frozen yogurt. And you know what? Afterwards, you really felt like going out and getting some frozen yogurts. You want people to be inspired enough that they are actually moved to action. While creating action is your ultimate objective, you also want to keep your enthusiasm up throughout your entire presentation. This will keep your audience's attention and maintain a sense of energy. I remember once I was doing a presentation where I offered a free CD to anyone who could run to the front of the room. I was trying to point out that people need to take action because many people sit in the back and do nothing. Well, there was a guy sitting off to the side who jumped up and ran toward the front of the room in pursuit of this prize. In the process, his right leg, his prosthesis, fell off, but refusing to be stopped, he literally did a roll forward in his suit. He then crawled until he made his way to the front of the room. It seems crazy, but the audience loved it. He was a great sport. Everyone was genuinely having fun, and most importantly, they were really interested in what was going on. That's the kind of excitement and energy you want to generate in your audience. I mentioned this earlier, and I can't stress it enough. You must videotape yourself while you're presenting. Is it painful? Yes. Is there growth? Yes. We want you to be energetic during a presentation, but this can get carried away. Make sure you don't have any irritating mannerisms while you're speaking in front of others. These quirks can be overt or subtle, but in either case, you probably won't realize they're irritating. That is, if you even realize you're doing them at all, until you see them on video. When reviewing your video or DVD, check for common public speaking blunders like vocal fillers, you know, or annoying gestures? Do you use your hands and arms to the point of flailing? Are you always touching your face? Do you pace back and forth? Know clearly what you look like to your audience before you're up there in an actual situation. As I mentioned earlier, you have to have a great opening to your presentation. Your closing's a little more basic, or your call to action. That's about 5% of your total speaking time. Remember, your conclusion tells the time it takes to clearly and concisely restate your main points. Once you've successfully gotten your concluding remarks across, get right down to your call to action. Make it short and to the point and energetic. Engage your audience's emotions so you can really drive home your point. Think of your conclusion as a final punch. The thing you want your audience to remember most, you spent so much time setting up, you want the conclusion or your call to action to be really powerful. Well, let's continue on with the 5 P's. Number 1, psyche; 2, preparation; 3, presentation skills; and number 4, people skills. People don't like you, they're not going to listen to you. And part of the public speaking package requires you to have great people skills. Now, many of you think, I do. Well, the research shows you don't. Because these skills will definitely carry you over into your presentation style. People skills and presentation skills should essentially become inseparable. You want your people skills to be so polished that they invariably permeate your presentation. You want every audience member to feel like you're reaching them individually. When it comes to effective people skills, there are 2 key areas: trust and connectivity. Trust obviously heads the list, because if people don't trust you, you can forget everything else. In my persuasive toolbox, I have what I call the 5 C's of trust. If you consider each of these 5 attributes, you will recognize that you really must have all of them to be a truly trustworthy person. Character, credibility, competence, confidence, and congruence. Let me illustrate that with a story. Let's say you're moving into a new area and needing to find a dentist. Suppose a certain dentist was competent, confident in his abilities, had credible qualifications behind him, but lacked in the character and congruence areas. Suppose he did great work, but was always overbilling patients. Would you go to him? Would you trust him? What if he measured up in each of the other 4 areas, but demonstrated a real lack of confidence? What if he was always wringing his hands and always second-guessing his work, and was generally unsure of himself? Would you feel comfortable seeing him? Would you trust him? What if he was a really nice, well-meaning guy with solid credentials who wouldn't hurt a fly, but he was always making careless mistakes in his works? Would you go to this dentist? Would you trust him? In this light, it is easy to see that each area of trust is crucial. Let me repeat them. Character, credibility, competence, confidence, and congruence. Put another way, strength in one area does not compensate for lack in another. So too it is with your interactions with others. You can't leave any room open for people to doubt you or your intentions in any way. If they do, their perceptions of even the most remarkable presentation will always be slightly tainted. For ultimate trustworthiness and the greatest potential to influence people for the better, always seek to be square with yourself and with others in each of the 5 areas of trust. You've heard of the law of connectivity and the maximum influence, but it's critical in people skills. Connectivity is the ability to connect with others and to make them feel that they can connect with you. It is a mutual rapport that develops spontaneously and naturally. How does this connectivity transfer from people skills to your presentations? If they can't connect with people on a one-on-one basis, how are you going to connect with an entire audience? Remember, your audience is a group of individuals, so you still have to think of connecting with them in that way. You still want your communication to penetrate each member of your audience in a personal and intimate way. The best way to begin working on your degree of connectivity, then, is your interactions with individuals. Because one of the elements of connectivity is attraction. As superficial as it may be, we feel more connected to people we find attractive. Social psychologists call this the halo effect. Did you know that the research shows that ugly convicts get longer sentences than better looking ones? Better looking students get better grades? It's totally illogical, but that's what the research shows. I'm not saying that in order to be an effective persuader, you have to look like you should be on magazine covers, but you should take care that you are well-groomed and professionally dressed. A polished appearance truly does make a difference, even if only on a subconscious level. Always try to exhibit a positive spirit aura about yourself. Besides the fact that others will notice your aura and like being around you, your optimism will help you in your own life as well. So number 5 your persuasion skills. Presentation versus persuasion is very different. So to recap, number one, psyche. Number two, preparation. Number three, presentation skills. Number four, people skills. And of course, number five, we talked about persuasion. We know through research here at the Persuasion Institute that the world of persuasion has changed. It's changed in the last 20 years. It's changing every day. It now takes more work to be influential and persuasive. Analysts are now saying that one individual can be bartered by over 5,000 persuasive messages a day. That sounds like a lot, but by the time you factor in all the commercials, billboards, newspaper, junk mails, and even the message on your cereal box, it is a very believable figure. People are becoming numb. You need to become magnetic. So what has this advertising overload done to the average consumer? It has made us all more skeptical. We now have our guard up more than ever. Moreover, people are more educated nowadays, as a result, tend to be more analytical. So how do you cut through all the hype and remain persuasive in spite of today's heightened skepticism and mistrust? Well, for starters, all persuasive skills we've discussed thus far will give you a huge advantage. Are there any other skills you can hone to make yourself even more persuasive? I would say it would be a giant plus to learn effective persuasive skills. Even if you're not a salesperson, you're trying to sell an idea. Even when you're not dealing with an actual physical product, the same sales techniques and strategies sometimes apply. It would be very worth your while to take a course in effective persuasion. Study persuasion, learn persuasion. You can communicate, but you also need to convince. You can present, but you also need to be able to persuade. You can inform, but you need to be able to influence. So when you look about persuasion, you really want to know about persuasion. See where you rank in the world of persuasion. We've identified 10 areas that you need to have to be very persuasive, especially during your presentation skills. If you haven't done so, go to magneticpersuasion.com and take your persuasion IQ and see where you rank nationally. What are you doing well and what can you work on? It doesn't matter what you think. It's what the world thinks. It's all about perception. Because even when you've mastered these skills, you'll meet some resistance. Resistance can always be categorized in one of three ways. Number one, your prospects still don't have a strong enough reason to move forward. Number two, they simply and honestly do not have the resources to move forward. And number three, they still don't feel a strong enough rapport with you as a product or service representative. When your prospects are resisting you because they just don't have a strong enough reason to move forward, you simply go back to square one. You highlight their current situation and show them how it stacks up against their desired situation. To overcome their resistance, you have to walk them through a comparison of the pain and discomfort or less than desirable state associated with the present situation versus the gains and advantages their new situation will bring them. Usually, if you do a good enough job in sharply contrasting the two situations, current versus desired situations, the answer becomes obvious and your prospects persuade themselves. When someone struggles in the area of resources, that doesn't always mean money. While you may be limited in the amount of financial help or suggestions you can offer, don't give up. It might be that your prospects, your audience, are lacking resources in other terms, such as support from family and friends or colleagues, their time, or even their ability. These are areas in which you may have a little more flexibility and control. For example, can you help your resistant prospects or audience figure out an alternative schedule that will allow for more time? Is there a spouse or parent you can involve to bring more support? Is the lack of ability possibly attributable to simply a lack of information or education? Be creative and look for alternative ways to resolve these situations. Rarely is resistance a permanent and unalterable situation. Finally, it is because of you, as your product or service representative, that your prospects are struggling. Go back to your basic people skills. Do they trust you? If not, figure out why and how you can rectify their concerns. Hone your connectivity. Do they feel like they can relate to you and that you have their best interest and heart? Tell you right now, your presentation skills, how you come across, is critical to your ability to persuade and influence. Understand these five areas. They all interconnect and make a great, perfect, persuasive presentation. Your mindset. Are you prepared? Your basic presentation skills, learning people skills, and integrating all of that in the world of persuasion. I know you can do this. I've trained great presenters and great persuaders. It can come together. You could learn it. Dedicate yourself to improving yourself. Let me just review real quick. As you develop each of the five areas of this powerful presentation, remember, psyche, preparation, presentation skills, people skills, and persuasion, you will find that you'll become more and more able to effectively communicate with others. I know that the gift of powerful presentation changes people's lives. The fact that you're even listening to this audio demonstrates you have the interest and desire to persuasively succeed. I want to stress to you that you're on the verge of taking one of the most rewarding, profitable talents possible. Whether it's speaking before thousands or persuading the children under your own roof, as you master these techniques, you'll become able to skillfully and convincingly change lives. Learn, grow from these techniques. You will know how to excite and influence others, to create converts, and to have a coherent, persuasive plan so that people feel empowered by your message. Always remember, as I said in the very beginning, that as you communicate with others, the power lies within you to educate, inspire, and entertain with passion, compassion, and purpose.